It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And welcome to Monday. We are inching toward the middle of the month. Thanks so much for being a part of the program. A lot to do today, a lot to uncover and discuss. How about Omaha? Here we come. That's LSU heading to Omaha. And this is a team that has been number one at various times of the year, expected to make quite a showing. And by the way, they'll have some company. Gators have punched a ticket, and they'll take on Virginia. Tennessee could say we're heading there as well. Tennessee playing Southern Miss later in beautiful Hattiesburg, Mississippi. We could have an all-SEC matchup this weekend in Omaha. Meanwhile, Georgia, headline today in the AJC, out of control, reckless culture, off the field marks UGA's football team. We'll have Alan Judd, the senior investigative reporter for the AJC, on later. The University of Georgia has issued a response, and it goes as follows. The recent incidents of reckless driving are completely unacceptable, and the University of Georgia Athletic Association is addressing this conduct with appropriate action, including a range of disciplinary actions. Measures can range from suspensions and athletic participation, restrictions to community service, to mental health treatment and mandated educational programs. As with all academic and student athlete wellness and health matters, the specifics remain confidential between the athletic association and the student athlete. Consistent with other Power Five programs, we historically do not suspend players for minor traffic violations, infractions, or speeding tickets, but we do pursue appropriate action. In response to the severity of more recent behavior, we proactively introduce punitive measures to heighten consequences. As an example, we are updating our awards policy to enable student-athlete monetary awards to potentially be reduced for serious misconduct, and when we now become aware of more serious infractions, such as a super speeder violation, the disciplinary process involves a one-on-one meeting with the director of athletics to assess and address the high-risk behavior. For societal context, studies have suggested that drivers age 16 to 25 receive a third of all speeding tickets, with speeding tickets peaking at the age of 19 and dropping off steadily as drivers age. We are aware of this occurrence, and it is why we place so much emphasis on educating and counseling our student athletes and holding them accountable. Any suggestions that the Athletic Association's disciplinary action has been relatively minor is speculative and not based on the facts. We will continue to implement and refine our internal disciplinary measures with increased emphasis on motor vehicle safety responsibility and accountability. That is from the UGA Athletic Association. NIL was a big story last week, as all of you remember, the NIL summit, and then the SEC meeting with Capitol Hill administrators and legislators. There's a picture there of Saban, Katie Britt, and the president of the University of Alabama, Stuart Bell. In the midst of all that, one of the iconic athletic directors announced his retirement. He'll be replaced by an NBC executive. We are speaking of Jack Swarbrick. Pat Forty will join us later on to talk about his legacy and why so many veteran athletic directors are walking away. And Wednesday, we finally reveal, well, not us, but the SEC, what the 2024 schedule will look like. There's a headline right there about games to see, and that's this season. And we are referring to Blake Topmeyer. We last saw Blake in Destin. These are the games Blake wants to see on the 24 schedule. Texas and Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, Florida, Florida, LSU. Don't count on that. Georgia, Oklahoma, Alabama, Tennessee, Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss, Tennessee. Arkansas, Oklahoma, Florida, Ole Miss. Missouri, Texas, Arkansas, Texas, Carolina, Tennessee. Auburn, Mississippi State, and Texas versus Vanderbilt. Okay, Blake, you got some in there I completely agree with, and some I wondered if it was happy hour and you were just trying to get your column in. Good afternoon. Welcome in. We don't know what we are going to see Wednesday night. We'll find out here very soon, but take us through your process of coming up with that list.
I can't remember what day I filed this, Paul. Maybe a happy hour was approaching. But, I think with Oklahoma and Texas coming into the conference, one of the things that makes this exciting, I think, for football fans, for SEC fans, is, how you can play around with some of these matchups. I mean, one of them I have earmarked there that I'd like to see as soon as possible is Georgia-Oklahoma. I mean, you've got a storied college football blue blood in Oklahoma against the juggernaut currently atop the sport. And yet you look at the history between these programs and it's nearly zilch. I believe they've met on the field just one time ever. I think matchups like that stand out. I think also the opportunity, I don't know if the SEC will go for this, trying to get as many teams in the playoff as possible, right? But the opportunity to see Alabama and Georgia on the field against each other more frequently, much more frequently, is one of the appealing aspects of dumping divisions, is you don't go, 5, 6, 7 years between some of those marquee inter-division matchups. And, another one on my list, Auburn, Florida. And you talk to Auburn fans, Florida fans, that's a rivalry that a lot of fans of those teams wish was still on the annual docket. And, of course, it fell off in 2003 due to some changes in the interdivision rival structure within the SEC. I don't think those teams are going to be paired as rivals if the SEC eventually goes to a 9-game schedule. I don't think they're going to be annual rivals. But I know that fans of those two teams want to see each other more frequently, so I'd like to see it happen in 24.
Blake, the one I know you hear a lot about, considering your proximity to Neyland Stadium, and we all do, is Alabama-Tennessee. This is a game that has been sacrosanct in the SEC for my lifetime and a few others. So what are you hearing as we are now 52 hours away from the reveal?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Alabama-Tennessee is not on that 2024 schedule. And we've received no assurances from anyone other than Greg Sankey said, if he doesn't schedule the Iron Bowl and the Egg Bowl for 2024, he'll probably be fired as commissioner. And I think that's probably a safe bet that those two games will be on the docket. But I think beyond that, this is a chance for the SEC to play matchmaker, right? They essentially got that in exchange for the chancellors and presidents kicking the can down the road and saying they were going to stick with an 8-game schedule for at least 2024. And now you get, you hand the baton to the SEC to mock up this schedule really however they want. We heard Greg Sankey say in Destin that rivalries will be kept in mind, that fairness and balance will be kept in mind, but really, they kind of have carte blanche authority to devise this how they wish. And I would have to think, with the great lengths that the conference has gone to preserve rivalries like Alabama and Tennessee, even as the conference has grown and gone to divisions, I would have to think that that's on the 2024 docket, particularly with how that game went in 2022 and a rivalry that had been snoozing for kind of a decade plus. Really awakened with quite a sense of force there in Knoxville last October.
Blake Topmeyer with us for another minute or two. Blake, I remember talking to you in Destin, and you gave a very rational, reasoned, intellectual dissent on what you thought the SEC was about to do. They did it. Others went went scorched earth, petty, classless, cheap shots, which is fine. Everybody has a right to their opinion. But I'm curious, having seen a lot of criticism coming out of there, both measured and infantile, what do you think the leaders of the SEC are thinking about or have been thinking about over these past 2 weeks? I think the decisions are probably in terms of where to go Wednesday night.
In terms of where to go on the scheduling?
Yes, and knowing that there's been a lot of blowback for staying at 8 versus 9.
I don't think there's probably too much hand wringing over the thoughts of folks like me in the peanut gallery. I think anybody that had been clued into this the past few years probably could have expected the SEC was going to be roundly lampooned for its decision to stay at 8 conference games. But really, I think long term, what folks in the SEC and not just the league office, but people in university positions of power are looking at, one, can you squeeze more revenue out of your media partners, being ESPN? I think there's some thought by those within the conference of why give an extra conference game away for free? Why not make ESPN your media partner, put forward some commitment on the front end before you go to a nine game conference schedule? I think the other thing that remains to be seen here is the College Football Playoff Committee, I think, really has the power, much more than the folks in the peanut gallery, to bring the SEC to heel. We don't know what the schedule is going to look like beyond 2024. There's been some hints that maybe it goes to 9. But as one administrator told me recently, it's going to go to 9 games eventually. And I said, well, when is eventually? And that administrator said, well, that's a good question. I think eventually gets here a lot sooner, Paul, if the SEC is held accountable by the selection committee. If the selection committee still adores SEC teams and filling out a 12-team playoff, and if the money is not there to encourage the SEC to go to 9, I guess from a business sense, why would you? I mean, you're going to get criticized, but from a business sense, arguments can be made to stay at 8. But I think there's two things that have the power to take the SEC quickly from 8 to 9, either financial incentive or the playoff committee giving the conference incentive by saying, you're going to be held accountable for playing fewer Power 5 opponents, for playing fewer conference games than some of your other conference peers.
Always a great conversation with Blake Topmeier from the USA Today Network. So we mentioned we're 2 days away from finding out what 24 looks like, 7 p.m. right here on Wednesday night. We head to the break. We have a number of guests, as we mentioned, including Chris Fanini in a couple of moments. Your phone calls are nearby as well at 855-242-7285.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we're back. Always great to catch up with Chris Vanini from The Athletic. Chris, thank you very, very much for joining us. A number of things that we do want to talk to you about. Let us share the headline from your latest as you talk about where we are today in college athletics is starting to resemble a little bit of European soccer, which is well known to a number of people, but maybe not so well known to others. Good afternoon, and tell us where we all are headed in this crazy world of college football.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And it's a comparison that I think a lot of us who like both sports have seen for a long time. It's less like the NFL, college football is, and it's more like European soccer, where every town's got a team. You live and die with that team. There isn't a draft. There isn't necessarily a salary cap. It's very different. And it's a thought that's been in my head for a while. And with the Champions League final happening on Saturday, I had a thought, hey, like, let me, you know, reach out to some of my athletic colleagues over across the pond in Europe to talk about kind of the state of their sport and see how similar it is. And you see a lot of things. There are concerns that one league is becoming far richer than the others because of television rights. It's very difficult for smaller teams to hold on to players. The richer teams buy them up. There is concern about a super league or some sort of breakaway at some point. These are all the issues that college football is facing at the same time. And so I think you can look at a lot of similarities between the sports, and if there isn't some major change, could be the type of future.
Chris, we've seen a lot of activity, which I don't think we're seeing with the House of Commons or the House of Lords, where a number of college coaches last week went to Capitol Hill. I just somehow don't see that happening in European soccer. But in terms of what we saw, what's the end game, and not so much the end game, but the end result, and assuming nothing changes is your answer, where are we?
Yeah, obviously everybody made their big push up at on Capitol Hill to try to get some federal NIL legislation done, so everybody kind of plays in the same box. It basically has happened by the end of this year, because by next year we're in an election cycle, and this is definitely going to be put on the back burner. And every couple of weeks there's another state with a new law. Texas just signed a law a couple days ago that, you know, a school can't get in trouble from the NCAA for NIL issues and stuff like that. And if nothing changes, it's going to continue to just be wide open with lots of movement and lots of money going around. I think it was notable as well that late last week it came out publicly that the IRS put out a memo to be like, hey, a lot of these collectives, they're not actually nonprofit charities, and we probably need to scrutinize that a bit more. So, you know, college football is being, you know, starting to be regulated or trying to be regulated at the government level, federal government level, really for the first time since Teddy Roosevelt wanted the creation of the NCAA 100 years ago because players were dying. So if nothing changes, I think what we have seen the last year or two will continue, and more states will continue to pass these types of laws, and the NCAA will have even less power to enforce things.
Which begs the question, based on your first part involving European soccer and the second part in terms of what Washington is trying to do, which always makes the citizenry feel better. Where do you think we're heading here? I know there in 2 years we've seen so much activity, but in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, where do you think the sport is going to be, Chris, based on the people with whom you visit?
I don't know how and I don't know when, but I think we are getting to that spot where players are going to be employees. Either it's going to happen from the National Labor Relations Board, or it's going to happen in a court case, or a state law is going to pass something. Like California has a law moving forward again that would give some television revenue sharing to these revenue sports. You know, California is the reason NIL exists. You know, that was the first state to pass it many years ago. So I think we're ultimately getting to that spot where players are going to be either directly paid by the school or working with a collective in a way that doesn't involve Title IX, and it becomes more formalized. I think in the end, we're going to get there. It might be 3 years, might be 5 years, but I also ultimately think it will be a cleaner system once we get to that point. Coaches are burning out. players are getting hit up like crazy. Nobody really likes what's going on. Everybody can. I honestly believe coaches and ADs and people are earnest when they say, I'm okay with players getting money, players being able to do these things. But all of this happening at once is just too much for everybody. And I think we are going to just, by nature of government or courts or people doing things, get to a formalized step. It's just hard to say which one is going to trigger it, but there's so many things in on path now that something is going to trigger it.
Chris, I sat in a room the other day in Washington, a couple of feet away from Charlie Baker, the new NCAA president, and he mentioned the quote-unquote phrase student-athlete. I think he was into the teens. Can I ask you, if we end up doing what you just got through saying, meaning making them employees, can there be a law, or should there be a law, where the NCAA president and athletic directors and presidents can't use that phrase any longer? Because don't you think it's getting a little bit maddening?
You mean the phrase student athlete?
You had it right the first time, student employee.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why the term existed. I mean, to not be employees, to have different tax statuses and all this stuff. I mean, the guy, one of the first head of the NCAA, Walter Byers, I think was his name, was,
yeah,
later on came and said, you know, hey, we're exploiting these kids. I think everybody eventually comes around to that. And it's important to know, like, this is a relatively new thing. 20 years ago, coaches were not making $10 million. We were not building, you know, $200 million football facilities. This is a relatively new problem in the history of college sports because money got so big so fast. Coaching salaries went up. Athletic departments ballooned in size. And for the most part, you didn't necessarily add a bunch more sports or add a bunch more stuff. You just created things to try to recruit college athletes. So instead of saying, hey, look, we have a big fancy, you know, dining hall, here's a reason to come to school, how about we just pay you to come to our school? Like, you know, like it's a relatively new thing that I think ultimately, if you're outside of college sports and you look at the way college sports works, you think this doesn't really make any sense. This is not how business works in the real world. And I think it's all happening now very quickly, where things are changing in college sports, where it's going to eventually start looking like how the real world works.
Chris, I think these players could be making $10 million legally, and the administrators would still call them student athletes and kids. But that's where we are. Chris, always great to have you on. Chris Vanini, one of the most interesting and compelling people that we visit with here on the program. It is Monday. We're 2 days away from the SEC reveal. We're 30 minutes away from talking to the senior investigative reporter at the AJC. We're back with more after this.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results. Fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media posting, and even events management. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. Don't know much about marketing? No sweat. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Plus, you can send with confidence, knowing your emails are actually reaching your customers thanks to Constant Contact's best-in-class 97% deliverability rate. Tackle any challenge with Constant Contact's expert live customer support. Plus, everything's backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Let's get some callers here on what's already been a busy afternoon, and we're only 30 minutes into it. Will starts us off from North Carolina. Hello, Will.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just got back from vacation, Paul, and I really don't know who else to vent to other than you.
That's okay. We serve that purpose here.
Yeah, Jim does a lot, so I'm gonna hit you with mine. I went to Cherokee. That's in the mountains of North Carolina. Went to the casino. Went last week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And Paul, I know it's right in Georgia's backyard too, but I couldn't count the number of Georgia fans up there with their gear on. I mean, are they taking over the world?
Well, that happens, Will, when a team wins. You want to let everyone know. Now, there are some exceptions. Alabama fans wear their gear regardless.
There were a few up there.
Yeah, but Georgia fans are, it's been a long time since they've been able to wear national championship gear.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the mountains of North Carolina, and I know it.
Well, you're not far from Georgia there.
Right, right. And I seen a few Tennessee fans, and I conversated with them the same thing. I asked them, I said, have you ever seen so much Georgia stuff? They are really proud. Even at the pool area, I mean, we're talking like four-year-old kids going around with, like, Georgia swimsuits on. I mean, Paul, I hope the streak ends this year. I hope they at least get caught once in the SEC East. But I mean, come on, Ken. Are they really taking over the world?
Yes, they are. Old line to the victors along the spoils. Applicable even in college football. John is in Louisville. Hello, John.
Hey, no venting. Your last therapy bill cleaned me out. I'm going to talk about the Bud Elliott interview, but first, just a couple of things to take care of. I thought the Blake Topmeyer interview was great. I think going to divisions will make a huge difference. And shout out to Texas and Oklahoma, who are going to be playing Michigan and Ohio State in the next 2 years. As for UGA Athletic Association, having the super speeders called on the carpet, they need to do more than that, and they will get their clock clean with the lawsuit. One other thing, is there any update on Hurricane Dwayne that came ashore in Grand Isle this weekend?
We have not heard, but we advised, forget women, goats, dogs,
yeah, sheep, hide them all.
Goats. I mentioned goats twice for a reason.
And, hey, I truly enjoyed the calls last week, real quickly. Handsome and humble Joe and lovable Larry, and who knew how far you could stretch, excuse the pun, $2 back in this time was kind of funny, wasn't it? Almost got you off the air, though. Yeah. Hey, Bud Elliott had that blue chip ratio for 2023.
Right.
And Alabama's way up on top. But I noticed when he did the criterion, he didn't include transfers. So Alabama should have been well up in the 90s if you include transfers last year. Great team.
Can you keep a secret?
Just between us. No one else
I
listening.
I didn't really understand his – yeah. I was confused by his whole approach because – I just wondered if there were some, you know, I think he may have included the transfers, but I don't know how.
No, he didn't.
Okay, well, I don't know whether he included those who leave.
He does. He includes those who have come and go, but but not transfer, so to speak.
Okay, well, anyway, I'm still confused, and it's 5 days now since he was on.
Well, he's just taking the blue chippers, and I mean, if you take Penn State was number 12 in the order, that's merely going to the corner of great recruiting and poor coaching.
That's very true. Hey, thank you very much. We'll try not to confuse anyone too much. Doug is in Tulsa. Hello, Doug.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, man? I hope you're doing well.
We are. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I called last Friday. I was first time caller last Friday, and I was trying to make a point about Oklahoma being a blue blood, and one of the things that you told me was that when was the last time they won a national title? But you had Notre Dame in your top four. They haven't won one since 1987 or 88.
88.
And USC had one in 20 years. So I don't know. I don't want to quibble with you, but I just.
Well, Doug, first of all, I appreciate Oklahoma Nation being so thin-skinned, but my point being, we were talking about four or five. He asked me to list a couple of blue bloods. I said Notre Dame, Alabama, Texas. So, I mean, I was not Oklahoma would be in anyone's top 10, but they would not be in my top five.
Okay, I mean, that's fine. I'd have them number two behind Alabama, but
well,
I think Alabama's clearly number one.
The difference between
but,
you and me, Doug, is that I'm looking at it broadly. You're looking at it as a Sooner, and that's the problem.
Well, I'll give you that. I'll give you that point. Now, there's one other thing I want to talk about is we were down last year, and I have to admit, and we're all a little concerned and nervous about going into the big bad SEC next year because of our surprisingly down year. And this year's schedule is, I don't know if you've seen it, Paul, but it's pretty much a joke. And so if we don't go 9-3 this year, at least, I don't care what kind of talent we have. If we don't go 9-3,
here's
the
schedule
for
those who know. Remember, Georgia is off this schedule, the non-conference schedule,
yes,
Arkansas State, SMU, at Tulsa, at Cincinnati, and you know, I've got to get used to BYU being in the same league as Oklahoma for one more year. That looked rather strange. I mean, you say that schedule is a joke, but I can see one, two. Yeah, I think I can see about three losses. I think 9-3 is about where I would have Oklahoma next year.
And that. Yes, and that to me would be the minimum that he would need to that Venables would need to have to survive this job for this year's 9-3, because 6-7 was so bad. But if they go 8-4, I don't know if Venables is the coach.
Well, Doug, he may not be the coach, but I don't think he's going to get fired because he has you have an athletic director there who I think is close to the end. And you know, Venables was a very popular choice. I didn't really understand it, but then again, I'm not from Norman. I don't understand that connection that Venables. I mean, I know he was there for a very long time and was important, but I think sometimes you just have to move on. I think he's going to be there next year regardless. Thanks for the call. We take a break. We'll talk about the University of Georgia at the top of the hour. Your phone calls continue right here.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We're back here on a Monday afternoon, and Larry is up next. Good afternoon, Larry.
Yeah, man, bad news. I had a friend here in Shelby, you know, Todd, that calls.
Right.
Yeah, he had a heart attack, man. He's in Shelby Baptist. They got him in surgery, and his wife called and told me. So I thought I'd call and let you know, man, that's a good dude, man. I hate that happened.
No, I like Todd a lot. We just talked to him the other day. So he's having surgery now at Shelby? Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, he's in now, and she hasn't told me yet what they found out. But, you know, that guy, I went to church with him, and he found out I needed some limbs cut down. And, man, he showed up with a put my bucket truck and chainsaws. I mean, that's the kind of person he is. Just everybody prayed for him, man.
And, Larry, we will definitely all do that. I know and like Todd very much. I'm terribly sorry to hear that.
Okay. Just pray for him, and if I hear any more, I'll let Dan.
Yeah, please, Larry, let the family know we're all here, and I can't wait to talk to him again soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you very much for calling. Mike is up next. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing, man?
Very well. Thank you.
You know, I just want to say before I get on my rant, how thankful I am that you took my call. I mean, I tried calling C-SPAN this morning, and they put me on hold and all that, and, you know, I just felt like it'd be nice to call you.
Out of curiosity, what would compel someone to call C-SPAN?
I woke up at 7. It felt like that day. You know, it felt like a good day to call.
Even more curious, Mike, if you had gotten through to C-SPAN, what was your question?
Something dumb. You know, something like kind of irrelevant from the topic, you know.
Well, I mean, has C-SPAN like ever had anything that wasn't kind of irrelevant?
I don't know, man.
I'm not talking about when they cover Senate hearings. I'm just talking about their day-to-day call-in. I mean, you know, that's good morning. Today on C-SPAN, we have the author of The Three Branches of Government, How We Got to This Point, and Why the Founders Were Wrong. He's a professor at Amherst. I mean, you ever watch that stuff?
It's NPR. Well, not really. Okay. Barely ever. I rarely watch C-SPAN at all. I just usually go to your YouTube page. But just want to say, I can't wait for 2024 when, you know, the SEC games are finally going to be broadcast on ABC.
I agree.
That's going to be a great day.
Again, we wish CBS well in its future endeavors, but we can't wait to get rid of them.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad too. I mean, I kind of miss it, like back when ABC had their own sports division, ABC Sports.
Oh yeah.
You know, before they had that ESPN on ABC, but you know, I'm still glad because you know I live in the Tuscaloosa, Birmingham area, and I may have like I use an antenna. And I got the best reception with ABC 3040. So, like, it just feels like a good home for, you know, Alabama football games and all that stuff. So, I'm just glad.
Okay, well Mike, appreciate you calling. Can you still use an antenna to get the local channels? Okay.
Yes.
Well, has an antenna and he called C-SPAN. I was afraid to ask the next question. Trey is in Arkansas. Hello, Trey.
How you doing today, Paul?
Quite well, thank you.
I was calling in to predict Arkansas's 8 SEC opponents for 2024, and I was wanting to get your opinion on it. I have the Longhorns, the Aggies, the Mizzou Tigers, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and LSU. I think that's a pretty good list for Arkansas.
Trey, that's a good list. I'm optimistic. I hope we get big-time games, and I don't know why I think we're going to. Appreciate it. Your running buddy Matt calling. These two guys are linked.
Hey, what's up, man? Loser! You pathetic Arkansas team. Is he going to beat us this year, Trey? Oh, I can't wait for that game. So we can massacre you, so we can whoop the living crap out of you, so you go crying back home to Arkansas. You pathetic ass alpha team. Oh, it's going to be such a poor game for you, you pathetic losers. And, Paul, let's hear about our con women's pulling away from Max Johnson. You think he's going to start this year? And what do you think about the whole contract with Jerry Jones?
I wish the contract with Jerry Jones was over today. I think it's time to get back to campuses. That's where college football games belong.
Well, how do you think that A&M and SEC is going to get out of it?
I have no idea. I mean, basically, it would be nice if Arkansas and A&M went to see Jerry and said, listen, we played in your stadium for 10 years. We're done. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And Steve is up next in Florida. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Paul. Hey, I really enjoyed the interview with Chris Vanini. He brought up an excellent possibility of Title IX in college football falling outside of the umbrella of Title IX.
Right.
And what does that mean for the other sports? And I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I've got a daughter who plays tennis in the SEC, and I'm wondering what that means for the future of, you know, those other Title IX sports.
Well, as you know, Steve, football pays most of the bills, and
amen.
I think it's great. I think everyone benefits from college football's money. I don't think college football should be a socialist society where everybody gets an equal share. But I think it depending on what school you go to, most of golf, tennis, volleyball is paid for by football mm-hmm. revenues.
Right, right. You know, I'm a bit of a hypocrite, Paul. I grew up thinking it wasn't fair that football had to prop up everything else, but now I've, you know, the good Lord had a sense of humor and brought me a daughter, and here we are, you know.
So I'm glad you think that way, but I heard this woman the other day say that we need to share the wealth. The wealth is already shared. And,
yeah.
Give college football some credit for being what it is and helping to pay the rest of the bills. And I think that's fantastic. And I'm glad your daughter had a chance to participate in that. Thank you for the call. We've had a very busy first hour. It has been breakneck with a number of guests, including your phone calls. We will talk about this article in the AJC today about Georgia's culture. Alan Judd is an investigative reporter for that publication, and we will speak to him in a moment.